This is Black and Right on AM 560 with Charles Love and John Anthony.
Welcome back to Black and Right with Charles and John. Charles here, flying solo. So, now it's time for you to participate if you want to go, give us a call at 312-642-5600. I'd like to know either your take on my trip to former communist land and what your thoughts are about the things we talked about, the cautionary tale for where we're going with where I'm coming up with now. And now we're going to switch gears and talk about the Democrat debate. Now, I know the debate was on Tuesday, so many of you either already ignored it and threw it out of your mind, or you listened to some of your favorite talk show hosts after that, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, give their recap. So hopefully I'll have something different or more interesting to add, or if nothing else, this will give you an opportunity to call in. Maybe you were busy during the week and you get to participate and we can have a dialogue about it. Again, 312-642-5600. Now, first, I want to talk about how my approach, I guess, would be a little bit different, because I don't agree with any of the people who were on that stage on Tuesday. But I don't want to just dismiss them all as crazy, as if nothing that they say made sense, because that was a little bit. The problem is most of it was when some of them was pushing back against the others who weren't making the further left ones, or they may be right about a problem and completely wrong with what we need to do with it. But as conservatives, I think instead of just saying, dismissing them, because one of these people are going to have a real legitimate shot at being president. So instead of dismissing them, just take them at their word, dissect what they say, and go from there and just have a true conversation. Basically, people with a microphone like me, or people who talk to their friends and family, it doesn't matter. So use that time to gently and intelligently explain what these Democrat candidates are, what they're saying, what it really means. And the second thing, you'll notice that I'll be playing some clips, and there's some candidates I don't have any clips for. Well, some of the candidates are just not worth playing clips on, and two of the most interesting were Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, and I'm not calling them out because they're colored, or people of color, or whatever name they use, black folk. But it was sad to see what they did. So Cory Booker, I think, was asked a question about like universal basic income or something. But it was so late into the debate when they got to him. He was like, thanks. First of all, I'm so glad you came to me. And while I'm here, I want to address what that person said about five questions ago and what that person said three questions ago. And so he was all over the place. So it was just sad. So there's nothing from him, because he really didn't have anything outside of anger to add. Harris, I didn't put anything, because she was just trying to, in a lesser way than Corey, kind of make a mark and say, look, I'm important. So she did. One of her remarks was something about, they came to her about a topic, and she's like, well, first, this is our sixth debate and no one's saying anything about women's, you know, medical issues, and it's so important. I got to say that people are literally going to die, you know. And then the moderators had to say, you know, that's not what we're talking about now. Well, it's got to be said. And, you know, some of the people that, you know, the lemmings were like, yeah, that's good. But they really didn't have anything. They didn't stay on topic. They weren't presidential. They didn't have anything important to say. So what's the point? So now with the rest of them, there was some interesting things, most of it bad, but still interesting. And I want to start with Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi, because Tulsi's that sneaky leftist. So she's, you know, very poised. She remains professional and she's very calm under pressure. I give her that. And she's willing to push back against the other candidates like no one else on the stage is willing to do. So it makes her seem, you know, like one of the big boys. Yeah. Dude, we need to take her seriously. And it's dangerous, because I hear a lot of conservatives make the mistake of saying, yeah, you know, Tulsi Gabbard is the one that we can take seriously. You know, she's the only one. Like, if you ask the question, if you had to vote for a Democrat and you're a right winger, who would you vote for? They all say Tulsi Gabbard. And I want to play my first clip here. And this will be a glaring reason why people say that. Right. So they started off, of course, they started the debate talking about impeachment, asking them if they thought Trump should be impeached, if they felt that the Congress was being fair, why they thought that. And to a person, yes, he's the worst president ever. I agree with that guy. He's the worst president ever. He's the worst president in modern history. No, no, ever. And then they went to Tulsi Gabbard, and Tulsi had a different take. Let's listen
to impeachment
one.
Is driven by these hyper-partisan interests, it will only further divide an already terribly divided country. Unfortunately, this is what we've already seen play out as calls for impeachment really began shortly after Trump won his election. And as unhappy as that may make us as Democrats, he won that election in 2016.
Okay. So that one little sentence says a lot. First, you have to give her credit. She is the first of any Democrat, House, radio, TV, singer, anybody to say he won that election. So she deserved credit for that. And I understand why conservatives do that. Secondly, and more importantly, she called out the fellow members of her party, not just the presidential candidates, and said that this is a hyper-partisan attack. And it's proven because the day he won, they were trying to impeach him. Now, what could he have done? He could be terrible. He could deserve be. You could say that he deserves to be impeached. That's fine. And what her point is, even if I give you that, you couldn't have known that, right, on November 9th of 2016 or January 20th of 17. Yet, one person on that stage, Steyer, and Maxine Waters were constantly saying he's got to go. So her point is incredibly valid. And she's saying that continuing to do this is going to hurt the party. So that's the good. That's the plus. That's the reason why conservatives say, see, there's somebody with some common sense on the stage. But wait a minute. It's not the next clip, but remember this conversation because we'll come back to her. And then she's going to prove herself to be no different than the rest of them. So that was an impeachment piece. And it kind of turned Anderson Cooper wanted to ask Joe Biden about his son in the Ukraine. Now, I'm going to play this clip both because of Biden and his really interesting response. So it's going to be two clips because I'm going to have something to say about the first one first. But the first clip is important. It's the setup to Biden's response and it's Anderson Cooper's question. But it's important because keep in mind, this is one party's primary to pick somebody to challenge the other party to dictate and find out who the people will elect to be the next president of the United States. This is the mainstream media who's supposed to be impartial. We want to ask the questions and push back against Trump and against these people to do the right thing and be fair to the American people. So to ask the questions the American people want to know. We're impartial. I don't have a dog in the fight, these people are saying. So listen closely to Anderson Cooper's question to Biden about Hunter. Listen closely. Clip two.
Vice President, President Trump has falsely accused your son of doing something wrong while serving on a company board in Ukraine. I want to point out there's no evidence of wrongdoing by either one of you.
Stop that right there. So this is the impartial moderator for a Democrat debate saying, you know, the impeachment inquiry, before that, he says, the impeachment inquiry is centered on President Trump's attempts to get political dirt from Ukraine on Vice President Biden and his son. And then he said that it's false. There's no evidence of wrongdoing. Trump's not telling the truth. He's lying. You did nothing wrong. I want to make sure everybody know that you did nothing wrong. Did you get that? Impartial. That is sad that nobody in the media called him out for that, either at CNN or anywhere else. That's not moderating. It sounded like the chair of the DNC asking the question. But then he followed it up with the question, and that's where Biden kind of gets into a pickle.
Having said that, on Sunday, you announced that if you're president, no one in your family or associated with you will be involved in any foreign businesses. My question is, if it's not okay for a president's family to be involved in foreign businesses, why was it okay for your son when you were vice president? Vice President Biden?
Look, my son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I carried out the policy of the United States government in rooting out corruption in Ukraine. And that's what we should be focusing on. And what I wanted to make a point about, and my son's statement speaks for itself.
Okay. Semi-kudos to Anderson Cooper pushing back. So first he gave him a gift. Then he pretended to gently push him and said, but wait a minute. How can you say that? But still, fair is fair. Anderson Cooper had a point. Mr. Vice President, you said that if you become president, nobody in your family will have association with foreign businesses because that's not the right thing to do. So why is it right for you to do it? And his response was, my son did nothing wrong and we should be focusing on Trump. Oh, stop looking over here. And my son did nothing wrong. So these are the kind of pretzel twists that the Democrats did all night that I want to point out. So I don't, there are times when I'm going to go to the policy, but a lot of it is that if I give you, because if you read my book, We Want Equality, How the Fight for Equality Gave Way to Preference, I talk about conservatives needing to give the left their argument. I know it's hard. I know we don't agree with them, but they don't know how to get themselves out of their own quagmire, so you have to let them get themselves into it. So I say, okay, I give you your first argument, and then I watch them talk themselves into circles, and this is one of those examples. I did nothing wrong. My son did nothing wrong, but we should be talking about Trump. Don't focus on what I did, but if I win, I won't do the wrong thing, the thing that's not wrong that I did before that I won't do. But it gets better, because he said at the end of that statement, my son's statement speaks for itself. What he's not telling you is that his son's statement was that I made a mistake and I showed poor judgment. Anderson, to fairness to him, did a follow-up and asked him about that. Listen to Biden's response.
Mr. Vice President, as you said, your son Hunter today gave an interview, admitted that he made a mistake and showed poor judgment by serving on that board in Ukraine. Did you make a mistake by letting him? You were the point person on Ukraine at the time, if you can answer.
Look, my son's statement speaks for itself. I did my job. I never discussed a single thing with my son about anything having to do with Ukraine. No one has indicated I have. We've always kept everything separate, even when my son was the attorney general of the state of Delaware. We never discussed anything. So there'd be no potential conflict. My son made a judgment. I'm proud of the judgment he made. I'm proud of what he had to say.
Here's the pretzel. I did nothing wrong, but if I'm president, I won't do the thing I didn't do wrong again. I stand by what my son said. My son said he made a mistake. I stand by him, and I'm proud of the judgment he made, and I'm proud of what he said, which was that he made a mistake, but I didn't make a mistake. I just say, keep this in mind when you hear people say Biden is moderate, professional, he knows his stuff, because that was madness. Okay. But then we move on to Warren and financing. So after they decided that he should be impeached and everybody's wrong in Ukraine but Biden, they asked Warren about Medicare for all. She said, we can pay for it. Pete Buttigieg said she never answers the question. I think the question was yes or no, will taxes go up? And she went on, well, I've been to Puerto Rico and I met people. I like to eat pizza with two toppings on it, you know. Everything but the answer to the question. So they said, but I'm gay. You said that she won't answer the question. He said, see, she didn't answer the question today. Then they went to Sanders, who said, yeah, taxes are going to have to go up. So then they went back to Warren and they said this.
Senator Warren, to be clear, Senator Sanders acknowledges he's going to raise taxes on the middle class to pay for Medicare for all. You've endorsed his plan. Should you acknowledge it, too?
So the way I see this, it is about what kinds of costs middle class families are going to face. So let me be clear on this. Costs will go up for the wealthy. They will go up for big corporations and for middle class families. They will go down. I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle class families.
Senator Warren, to be clear.
You see, right there. I don't have to make anything up. This is their words. Just like Biden had the pretzel, we're going to call it the pretzel now. This is Warren's pretzel. Warren says, Medicare for all. Stop. I'm tired of people saying we can't afford it. We can afford it by taxing the rich. Are you going to raise taxes? First, she doesn't answer. When pushed, she said, I will not sign a bill that won't lower cost of middle class. Now, folks, you got to understand this middle class thing. Both sides plays this game. It's a word game because no one really knows what middle class is. But what the politicians do know is that most Americans, somewhere around 70-80% of them, consider themselves middle class. You got a family of four making $300,000 a year. They say I'm middle class. You got a family of three making $60,000 a year. They say they're middle class. So we don't even know who they're talking to. But the point is, there's no way she can fund this without raising taxes. And she keeps saying, not only, she doubled down, not only will I not raise taxes, I'm going to lower taxes, is what she says, right? So she's going to lower taxes on the middle class, which is everyone. I already mentioned that But I'm Gay pushed back and said she won't answer the question. Amy Klobuchar, this is her response to Warren's fuzzy math.
The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done. And we can get this public option done.
The difference, if you didn't catch that, between a plan and a pipe dream, which is what she's calling what Warren was doing. A pipe dream. Biden got into the action, and then he pushed back against her. And he said it's time to be important to be honest with the American people and admit this.
Well, first of all, the plan we're hearing discussed is the Biden plan, the one I put forward. Build on Obamacare, add a public option. We can go into that. I can talk about that if you like. But here's the deal. On the single most important thing facing the American public, I think it's awfully important to be straightforward with them. The plan is going to cost at least $30 trillion over 10 years. That is more on a yearly basis than the entire federal budget. And we talk about how we're going to pay for it. The study recently came out showing that, in fact, it will reduce cost. But for people making between $50,000 and $75,000 a year, their taxes are going to go up about $5,000. Because the fact is, they'll pay more in new taxes, 7.4% plus or 5% plus a 4% income tax.
So, just to recap, we got Warren saying, I want Medicare for all. We can pay for it by just taxing the rich. We'll be able to pay for that. No, all this other stuff. We got her saying that taxes will go down on the middle class. Klobuchar saying that it's a pipe dream. Biden saying, yes, it's going to cost more than our entire debt, our entire current budget, just on her Medicare plan. And then Sanders saying that everything will be free. There'll be no cash out of pocket, no copay, no nothing. Everything is free, even more than Warren. So I think half these people who are considered the top four or five have already eliminated themselves, you know, if you're being honest. And then to throw a little bit of Sanders in.
According to a recent study, about a quarter of American jobs could be lost to automation in just the next 10 years. Ohio is one of the states likely to be hardest hit. Senator Sanders, you say your federal jobs guarantee is part of the answer to the threat from automation. But tens of millions of Americans could end up losing their jobs. Are you promising that you will have a job for every single one of those Americans?
Damn right we will.
Damn right we will. I'm guaranteeing that every American will have a job. Government job, private job, high-paying job, low-paying job. Where is it going to come from? You're going to use tax dollars to do the FDR works plan redux? Just pay people to just stand in a corner with a shovel and spin it around? This makes no sense. And these people are serious contenders to be president of the United States. We are in trouble. This is not good. But Beto O'Rourke has a solution. They asked him, what are you doing to bring jobs back? This makes perfect sense. Beto O'Rourke.
Congressman O'Rourke, same question for you. How would you convince GM to bring production back to the United States from Mexico?
I've met with these members of the UAW who are striking outside of facilities in Cincinnati, in Lordstown, Ohio, which has just been devastated, decimated by GM and their malfeasance, paying effectively zero in taxes last year. The people of Ohio investing tens of millions of dollars in the infrastructure around there. What they want is a shot. And they want fairness in how we treat workers in this country, which they are not receiving today. Part of the way to do that is through our trade deals, making sure that if we trade with Mexico, Mexican workers are allowed to join unions.
Did you hear that? If I could go back just 10 seconds, I would play it again. He said part of the way, forget about all the fluff. He started off just talking about what has happened. We don't care about that. What he said was, how do you convince GM to bring jobs back to the U.S.? Part of the way to do that is to make sure that Mexican workers are allowed to join trade unions. Okay? Trade unions. Then on guns, I want to skip ahead because I'm going to tell you why in a minute. O'Rourke was asked about, first he said he was going to take guns back from people, but he said it wouldn't be a mandatory buyback. Because what are you going to do if they don't buy back? He said, I just expect fellow Americans to follow the law. I don't have this clip. The same way we expect everybody else to follow the law. So he said, so, okay, what does that mean? We don't go door to door to do anything else, and we won't go door to door to do this. We just expect people to follow the law. So you're going to have a mandatory buyback, but if nobody buys it back, nothing happens. So I think that madness alone eliminates O'Rourke. We've eliminated Biden. We've eliminated Warren. Harris and Booker and Castro were jokes. We're running out of people here. So, only one we got left then that all the conservatives are saying, at least in the middle, they're not conservative. At least they make sense. It's Gabbard. Remember, Tulsi Gabbard said the wonderful thing about impeachment that you got to be fair and this is a hyperpartisan attack. Well, and to her credit, I give her one more positive. She did make a comment about abortion. I don't have the clip, but they asked her about Roe v. Wade. She said she wanted to protect Roe v. Wade. And she said, went on to say, I do, however, the only one of all of them, think that there should be some restrictions in place. I support codifying Roe v. Wade while making sure that during the third trimester, abortion is not an option unless the life or severe health consequences of a woman are at risk. That's a Democrat candidate. Give her credit. It may not be a far enough for most conservatives, but she's leaps and bounds ahead of every other candidate. But they asked her about the troop resolve. This is the pretzel that they all got twisted up in. Because remember, the left blames all of Republicans and conservatives of being warmongers. They all don't want the war. War is bad. But then when they asked them what they pull out, they said no, because Trump pulled out. So we don't want the troops there, but we don't want to say we want them out because Trump said he wants them out. So we're opposite Trump. So how do we say opposite Trump, we want the troops pulled, but at the same time say we'll put the troops there? So some of them said, I would do it, but I would do it a different way. I would put them back. Gabbard was the worst, surprisingly, on this. This is what she said.
Congresswoman Gabbard, last week you said that American troops should get out of Syria now. You don't agree with how the president handled the withdrawal. What would you have done differently? How would you have pulled out troops without the bloodshed we're seeing now?
Oh, first of all, we've got to understand the reality of the situation there, which is that the slaughter of the Kurds being done by Turkey is yet another negative consequence of the regime change war that we've been waging in Syria. Donald Trump has the blood of the Kurds on his hand.
So, she doesn't want the troops there. He pulls the troops and he has blood on his hand. This is what the Democrats were saying. This was the wildest. You have to go back and listen to all of them. Every one of them to a person. Either it's bad, and I've been saying for years, I don't want the troops there, but he was wrong for pulling the troops, to, I think I would just leave the troops there, to arguments with Tulsi Gabbard about whether the troops should be there or not. They didn't know where to go on this. It was amazing. So those are your candidates for the most part. A bunch of people who say they won't raise taxes, but they want to double spending. People who say it's not okay, that Trump is benefiting off of the government, but their family is benefiting off the government. They want a mandatory buyback, but you don't have to sell the guns back. It's just all over the place. Basically, it's an attempt to make this country what the countries I visited the last 2 weeks fought and died to get away from. So think about that as you listen to them, as you ponder what you do with the Trump presidency going forward.